Welcome to the Mayo Clinic Podcast. I'm Vivian Williams. Thousands of teenagers have a hard time getting moving in the morning. But for kids with POTS syndrome, or POTS, the fatigue is debilitating. Here to tell us more about this condition is Mayo Clinic pediatrician Dr. Philip Fisher.
Dr. Fisher, why don't we start out with a general explanation of what is POTS syndrome?
POTS, P-O-T-S, Postural Orthostatic Tachycardia Syndrome. The POT just means that when people shift from lying down to standing up and stay standing, their heart rate goes way too fast. So postural orthostatic tachycardia means when people stand up, their heart beats too fast to support their standing. The S means syndrome, so it's not just the heart rate change, but it's a collection of other findings, other symptoms, other problems that they have along with it. So POTS is a condition where people have a heart rate change, but it's most characterized in teenagers by the syndrome, the rest of it. They're usually fatigued, so they've got chronic fatigue. They've usually got headaches or some other pain somewhere. They're often dizzy. They often have nausea and digestive troubles as well. So POTS is a collection of findings characterized by a heart rate change, but seen with chronic fatigue and chronic pain.
And the heart rate change, does it speed up? Does it slow down? What does that change
heart
mean?
Heart speeds up. So normally somebody lying down at rest is going to have a heart rate of somewhere around 70 or 80. When we stand up, usually that goes up by 10 or 15 beats per minute and then settles back a little bit. For people with POTS, it goes up by 30 or 40 or 50 or even more beats per minute. So their heart rate would go from 70 lying down to maybe 130 when they're standing up. A huge increase as their body's off balance on controlling the blood flow.
So when they stand up, is that when they're feeling the symptoms, or do they feel the symptoms throughout life?
Good question. Most of the teenagers with POTS feel the symptoms all the time. They feel the dizziness when they stand up, and so that's the obvious part of it. But the other symptoms, the fatigue and the headache, sometimes not thinking clearly, those problems are present all the time. And it's a little tough to put it all together because the teenagers often are more bothered by the all-the-time feelings, even though we've named the condition based on what happens just when they stand up.
But that's the cause of the other problems, correct? The heart rate change?
What's the cause of POTS? That's a tough one. POTS seems to be caused by an imbalance of the nerve system's control over blood flow. The message is coming from the autonomic or involuntary nervous system to tell the blood vessels how tight or relaxed to be to control blood flow. That system is out of balance. So the problem is that the blood's not going to the right place at the right time to do what the body needs. So in fact, the heart rate change is probably a cause of some of the symptoms, but really it's more a sign of what's going on and that the whole system is out of balance.
That's a tough one.
It is a challenge. Mm-hmm. In fact, POTS was first described in 1993. So before then, nobody had actually recognized the condition. It was first described in teenagers in 1999. So in fact, we're just learning about what this is. And it was easy initially to put it together. It's, oh, you have the chronic fatigue, you have the dizziness, and your heart rate changes. We could name the condition. But now as we're learning more about it, it's tough to tease out how much the heart rate is just a sign and how much it's related to the symptoms. And we're learning a lot. Year by year, we're learning lots more about POTS as it's been recently recognized and now being better understood for the sake of kids, hopefully, that we keep learning.
Now, you're mentioning teenagers, but is this something that starts in infancy and continues through adulthood, or is it just in that age group?
It seems to start in the early teenage years. There are a few different kinds of POTS, and it's a mix of a bunch of things. Adults do get POTS as well. For them, some just get it, and they've got it for a long time. For other adults, it's more like it happens in teenagers. Typically, it's near the beginning of the teenage years when they're going through some changes in growth and changes in hormones. And then something happens, usually an illness like mononucleosis or some other illness with a high fever. So they're coming into a vulnerable time of life with hormone and body chemistry changes. Then they get an illness, and somehow that tips them out of balance. So typically POTS starts somewhere between 10 and 13 years of age, often triggered by an illness, and then the person, rather than recovering, is left tired and dizzy and feeling bad after that.
So say a virus, the flu, a cold or something will...
And it's usually a serious illness that pushes it, something that lasts a long time like mono or something with a real high fever that lasts for a few days, but usually a virus kind of illness, usually more than just a cold. But some illness comes, and somehow the body's response to the illness somehow ends up tipping the body out of balance, so the autonomic nervous system doesn't control blood flow very well anymore.
Okay, now you may have mentioned this, but I'm not sure I'm clear. If the onset is in the early teens or in the teen years generally, do they grow out of it? Does it continue for the rest of their life?
That's the good news. Most teenagers that get this do grow out of it. Adults that get it aren't so likely to outgrow it unless they get it the typical teenage way of starting with a virus infection. But most teenagers, as they get through the teenage years, will get better. So it's a problem to have it, and it messes up their teenage years, but almost all of them do seem to get better. And hopefully along the way we can do some things to help them get better faster and help them deal physically with it along the way.
So if they start around 13, they might get out in their 20s, 30s, 19?
Yeah, usually by the end of all the body changes. So somewhere between 18 and 21, the body seems to be back in balance with them doing better. Some people get better fairly quickly. A lot of them seem to take a few years, but usually by the time they're about 20, they're doing a lot better.
And those years are so tender, you know,
yes.
Around 10, 11, 12, 13, and then to have to be socked with this one, too, is tough.
And it's really the prime of life in a lot of ways, for education, for relationships, for decision-making for the future. And when somebody's too tired even to go to school and have social interactions, it really puts a damper on the rest of their life.
So what can you do to help these kids?
I think the biggest thing that helps in the short term is letting people know that this is a real condition. Many of them have seen a lot of doctors that haven't been aware of this condition since it's relatively new, and many of them have been led to believe that it's all in their head, that it's not a real problem that they have. So we can validate the reality of what they're feeling when we can identify what's going on. So I think we can help them cope with it just by letting them know that it's real and that we care about them and that they'll probably get better over time. We can also help them cope sometimes by having psychologists that are good at working with children with chronic medical conditions to help them realize that they will get better, but to cope with it for the months or years that they're bothered. There's some medicines that can also help. We can adjust what they drink and what they eat a little bit to help them so they'll feel better along the way. But the biggest thing to actually help them get better is exercise. And it's a little against what they feel like doing because most of these people are chronically fatigued, they don't have energy. But the only thing that really makes them get better quicker and actually recover faster is being in a regular exercise program.
Such as? What type of exercise?
Usually it's aerobic exercise. It seems like it's best if they're exercising in an upright position. So they're not just exercising for health, but it's to retrain their autonomic nervous system to better control blood flow. So we like them to have some sustained, somewhat vigorous, but not too vigorous exercise on a regular daily basis, as much as they can tolerate, but gradually building that up, even if they're just starting at a few minutes, working up toward being able to exercise for about 30 minutes a day. So for most of the teenagers, it turns out to be something like walking, if that's not too boring for them. Others, it'd be bicycling, but something upright so they can have some sustained exercise for several minutes, which will get their heart rate up a little bit, help their blood flow get going, and hopefully retrain the autonomic nervous system to get better.
Well, exercise, I mean, it's so wonderful. Not only does it help, in this case, it seems physically, but also psychologically, I'd imagine if these guys are fatigued, do they tend to get depressed, things like that?
Lots of these people do get depressed. Typically, the people that get POTS as teenagers are very high-achieving individuals. They're typically the straight-A students that are involved in multiple sports or music or drama things. So they're very active, very high-achieving, very successful. They've got a lot going for them, but after they've been tired and unable to keep up for months or years, many of them do end up getting depressed because of what they've got going on. There are benefits to the exercise. It helps them feel better along the way. And when it's done right, they can see that they're making progress and they're getting better. Where they used to be only able to exercise for 7 minutes, maybe they've worked it up to 15 minutes at a time. So they can see that progress. The challenge, though, is if they exercise too much, they can push their body too far and then end up dropping into feeling worse for several days as they have to recover.
That balance tends to be something we have to always striving for.
The real issue for teenagers all the time, and especially those with chronic fatigue or POTS, is balance. They need appropriate sleep, appropriate dietary intake, appropriate exercise.
So
balance is the key.
Yeah, so no caffeine, things like that?
Caffeine makes the blood vessels twitchy, which in a way would help because it tightens the blood vessels. But on the other hand, it makes them twitchy, so it ends up working against people with POTS. So people with POTS shouldn't have any caffeine. obviously shouldn't have any alcohol, and they need extra fluids. Typically their blood vessels are over-relaxed and they get floppy, and so we need more fluids to help fill up the blood vessels. But if we just give them more fluids to drink, they'll spend their time in the bathroom. So we need to give them more fluids with a lot of salt, and the salt helps hold the fluids in the system to fill up their over-relaxed blood vessels, so the blood will be there to fill up the system and keep it flowing. So we tell them to drink lots of fluids, eat lots of salt, and then avoiding caffeine and alcohol, and then trying to keep their weight in balance so we're not overtaxing their body. If the fluids they add are all milkshakes, then they're going to get overweight and have more trouble with fatigue.
I mean, all of those things sound like what you hear for healthy living, except for the salt intake.
Right. Yeah, the salt, we warn them. Once they get through their POTS, they need to go off the salt so they won't have high blood pressure as adults. But in fact, a lot of the treatment of POTS is just returning to what would be a normal, moderated, balanced lifestyle.
Okay, no medications?
Medicines do help for some people. The challenge we're doing research on and trying to learn more is to figure out which medicines will help which people. Since the blood vessels are floppy, sometimes we give medicines to block that relaxation of the blood vessels. Sometimes we give medicines to help tighten up the blood vessels. And then sometimes we give medicines that just tend to smooth through the nerve transmission between the involuntary nerve fibers and the muscles around the blood vessels. So there are three categories of medicines that we use a lot: the anti-relaxers, the tighteners, and the smoothers to work through the system. And other people have tried different medicines as well, which might be useful for some people. But our current challenge is finding the right balance of medicine for the individual patient. And that's tough sometimes because everybody's a little different with the way their nervous system is.
It sounds like it would be tough to diagnose. There's so many different symptoms these kids can have. How do you know when it's POTS, and how do you know when it's something else?
Very good question. The challenge is to think about it first of all, because if somebody comes in with chronic fatigue, especially following a virus infection, maybe they already all are depressed. There are lots of pieces going on, but the key is to think about it and check their pulse, their heart rate, when they're lying down and then after they've been standing up for a few minutes. And when you see an excessive change, 30 or 40 or 50 beats per minute of a heart rate increase when they're standing up, that would suggest that it really is POTS. In addition, we also do some other tests of the autonomic nervous system, and others have even more severe changes of that. So the key is to think about it and to test the heart rate in different positions to see if this is really a POTS kind of problem or some different form of chronic fatigue.
Are there any, is it dangerous at all? You said that it usually resolves over time, but sometimes does it resolve, or could it balloon into a dangerous condition?
It does not seem to balloon into anything dangerous. POTS is POTS, and that's dangerous in its own, just because you're taking a high-achieving teenager and lopping out 3 or 4 years sometimes from their life, right at their prime of decision-making and preparation for the future. So it's dangerous in terms of its academic and social consequences, but it's not dangerous in the terms of being life-threatening. Some of these patients will feel like it's life-threatening because when they stand up, their heart beats so fast and so hard, they feel like their heart's going to do something bad. They sometimes have trouble catching their breath. So sometimes POTS can mimic more dangerous things, but POTS by itself does not seem to be life-threatening or dangerous. It's just life-limiting along the way.
Now, if someone has POTS and it's kind of controlled and they're able to participate, can they play sports where they'd be taxed? Can they play football? Can they play volleyball?
The goal is to get people with POTS back to being able to be involved in sports. When they're doing that well, then they're okay. Some people have it more mildly. Here at Mayo, we tend to see the people that have it more severely and they haven't gotten better with other things that other people have done. But I've had some people that are fairly mild, and just with the fluids and the salt and the simpler sorts of things, they're able to return to sports and do well. So it is possible, and eventually they should be able to get back to full activity. And our goal along the way is to get them back at least as much as we can to their high-functioning academic and athletic performance.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many teenagers have this?
I don't know. We wonder. Nobody's done good studies to see. It seems like it could be as much as about 1% of the general teenage population. People have done studies of teenage girls in particular to see how many have significant problems with fatigue in their daily lives, and that seems to be about 30%. But that's just fatigue. They feel tired while they're doing things. To have POTS, with debilitating fatigue so they can't go to school is probably down in the range of maybe about 1 out of 100. But one thing we're looking towards doing is looking at a healthy school population to see how many really have excessive heart rate changes and might either be suffering from POTS or at risk of POTS, but still trying to cope with it. So nobody knows from good population-based studies, but it's probably in the range of about 1% of teenagers.
Okay, and just a question about fatigue. What is, when you say too fatigued to go to school, so they don't go to school, are they sleeping? Are they that tired that they're asleep, or are they just, you know, too wiped to?
Yes to all of that.
Okay.
The typical person with POTS feels blah, lack of energy. Some of them are sleepy, tired, but usually it's more just fatigue, no energy, don't feel like they can do anything, sort of tired. So the typical person with POTS isn't so much sleepy, as just feeling unenergetic. At the same time, though, people with POTS seem to have a shifted sleep cycle, so it's very hard for them to fall asleep at night. So they don't fall asleep sometimes till the early hours of the morning. Once they fall asleep, they often wake up several times during the night. And then by the time it's time to get up, they really have trouble getting up in the morning. But their body seems to be shifted, so somewhere around 11 in the morning till the afternoon, then their body's able to get up and get going. So for reasons we don't understand, people with POTS seem to have the shifted cycle. So to afternoons, they're more functional, whereas mornings, they're tired and having trouble getting out of bed and having no energy. But there seems to be a middle of the day to afternoon window where they might be more functional. So we send lots of people to POTS into altered school schedules so they can start later in the day and then go through the afternoon and concentrate their academic work when their body's at its best.
Okay. You mentioned that digestive issues were an issue, but what type of them?
Somewhere around a third or a half of people with POTS also have digestive troubles, and they can vary. The problem is that the blood flow doesn't match the need. So the blood's not going to the right part of the intestinal system when it needs to. So a lot of people with POTS have trouble with nausea. They've eaten food, they've had something to drink, their stomach's ready for digestive action, but the blood flow doesn't increase to digest the food, so they feel nausea. For others, less commonly, but some people with POTS, the trouble is more sending too much blood to parts of the intestines that don't have anything to do, and then they start having cramping, colicky pains because the intestines are trying to work on food when there's no food there to work on. So nausea would be the most common digestive trouble, but sometimes there are crampy abdominal pains or other abdominal pains that seem to be because the blood is either pooling or flowing in a way that doesn't match what the intestines need.
Wow. So tell me kind of what you'd like parents to hear from this. You know, if they suspect their child has some of these symptoms, what should they do? Because, I don't want to alarm people, oh, my child's tired, he or she must have this syndrome. But when should you start being suspicious that it's more than just, you know, typical teenage tiredness and staying up late, that sort of thing?
It's a real challenge because POTS seems to be one end of a spectrum, and along the way people go from normal to a little bit tired to very tired to tired enough to be missing school. But any teenager that's actually missing significant amounts of school because of tiredness or pain certainly should have more evaluation. They should be checked out, and their physicians should be thinking about POTS, partly to be able to help the POTS, but partly so they don't get too distracted looking for other things. Oftentimes, as parents, we have the idea that we want to find it. We want to find the problem that caused this so we can attack the problem. Many of these people started with an illness, but the illness is long gone, and sometimes we get too distracted looking for the illness that started it, even though that was just the trigger and the illness is no longer there. So I think the messages for parents would be, first of all, chronic fatigue is a real problem. It's fairly common. We need to take it seriously. We need to evaluate people for other problems, anemia, inadequate sleep or other sleep disorders, thyroid problems, and POTS. So doctors need to be thinking about all the things that could do it. And then once we found out what's going on, we need to focus our energies on what's actually going to be useful. Sometimes it's hard to get people to exercise with POTS. That's the thing we know that's the most important, so we have to tailor an individualized exercise program. So what should parents know? Parents should know that lots of kids are tired. There are lots of reasons for that, and most of those relate to life balance and how much we're demanding from our teenage bodies. But besides that, those that are missing school or having function problems of doing well enough in school because of tiredness, those individuals should be checked out by somebody that's thinking about POTS as well as all the other things. And if somebody has POTS, they can take hope, they can have encouragement that the child probably will get better and that there are some tangible things that can be done, partly medical, but mostly by lifestyle and exercise programs where the individual should be able to get better.
It is kind of hopeful because you hear so much now about, you know, teen suicide and teen depression, and if this is something that will have an end, boy, it's a lot better than right. being in that other situation.
Right. There are lots of bad medical problems. This is bad when you've got it, but it's not life-ending. It's something that should be able to get better so people can return to a healthy life.
Do general pediatricians out there other than Mayo know to look for this?
It's interesting. As we mentioned, it was only first noticed in teenagers and recognized as POTS in 1999. So lots don't know about it, but with increasing medical literature, more and more are knowing about it. So I've seen a change where up to about a year ago when I found somebody with POTS, neither they nor their doctors were very familiar with it. In the past year, I've seen more pediatricians and more families who have actually heard about POTS before they get here. So there is an increasing medical awareness and knowledge of the condition, and that's good. We still have a lot to learn about it, but people are more broadly aware of it.
Now, one last question. Does this syndrome put you at risk? I mean, are there any other things that go with it? Like if you have this odd regulation of your blood because of the nerve situation, does that mean you're at increased risk for a stroke or heart attack right. in the future? You know, is there anything else that goes hand in hand with it?
As far as we know, POTS is POTS and does not give risk of anything else in the future. In fact, it's not a heart problem, it's a control of blood flow problem. The heart's actually very strong and doing well. There does not seem to be any risk of heart attacks or anything else. The caveat in there would be that there are some people that seem to have other family members with POTS, which would make us wonder if there's some genetic influence. There are also some people that seem to have built up antibodies against their nerve endings that make them not get the messages to the muscles around the blood vessels very well. And we would wonder if some of those people might develop other autoimmune or other antibody problems. So we wonder a little bit about the genetics, we wonder about the autoimmunity, but as far as we know, POTS is just POTS. It's not associated with heart problems or lung problems or any other future disease. So once somebody gets through POTS, maybe they'll be stronger because of it and do better as adults, and maybe that'll help them hang in there as they're going through the tough teenage years with it.
Thank you for joining us. For more information on the various podcasts available from Mayo Clinic, go to mayoclinic.org/podcasts.